Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 364 in chapter 1 of Deuteronomy, where Moses is recounting the history of Israel, and he's talking about the fact that when they refused to go into the land, they listened to the spies rather than have trust and faith in God. God told them basically that I'm going to be able to make it now into the land. I'm going to have to stay in the wilderness. Well, at that point, they changed their mind like little children and decided not necessarily to obey God. Now they were going to do their own thing, because God at this point changed the command from going into the land to staying in the wilderness. And they were not about to listen to that. And so he says to them in verse 43, "So I spoke unto you, and you hearkened not, but you rebelled against the commandment of the Lord, and were presumptuous, and went up into the hill country." A lot of people don't realize that. That when God commands you to do certain things, if you don't do it at that point, then He changes His mind and He'll tell you just the opposite. If you go ahead and come and obey the command that He gave you earlier, you see, obviously, that's not going to be the will of God. And so, these Israelites were not interested in the will of God. They were not interested in obeying God. And so when He tells them to do it, they don't want to do it. When He tells them not to do it, they want to do it. You see? So they are rebellious both ways. And so that's what He said. You were presumptuous. And a lot of people that way, unfortunately. And the beginning of the story, from the beginning of the story, from the Garden of Eden to the end of the book, the whole story of mankind is rebellion, disobedience to the law of God. And obviously a lack of faith. And both of them are very important, but it's, God stresses more than anything else disobedience as a major problem of men. Because the heart of man is a kind of a heart. It is an enemy of God. It's not willing to listen to the God. It has another spirit in it. You see? The spirit of the unclean spirit of the devil. And it's a rebellious spirit, and so are the demons. They always lead the children of God into rebellion. And the heart of God, that kind of a heart, is not subject to the law of God. Neither indeed can be. This is what the Israelites were. Even though Paul stresses the fact that they could not enter into the land because they had no faith, and obviously they had no faith that God would deliver them. But the reality is, when people do not obey God, they are not going to build faith. Faith is something that generally happens as time goes by, over a period of time, when you have a relationship. While obedience is something that is required immediately. And so when we are in the kind of an attitude where we immediately obey the voice of God, then we're going to build faith. You see? And then we know that He is going to take care of all of our needs. He's going to deliver us and protect us and all those kind of things that we need. Israel never were in the habit of obedience. And so obviously they could never have faith. And this is where they are at this point. So in verse 44 he says, "And the Amorites that dwell in that hill country came out against you." Now these are the people that they were supposed to destroy. And instead, they are being destroyed by them. And God made it very plain. If you become my enemies, I will turn and become your enemies. And when we disobey God, God causes our enemies that we're supposed to destroy with His help, become our enemies. And that happens on a physical basis, on a spiritual basis, on a daily basis, with all of us. And therefore, you know, these are an awful lot of lessons that we can learn from here, and not only read a story of what happened a long time ago, but to see where we stand with God on any given subject, on any given law that He gives us. Do we say, well, that's not for us? You see, immediately we become enemies because we are disobedient. You know, this is not necessary for salvation, which is a presumptuous spirit and attitude to have. We do not decide that, God does. Well, the children of Israel had their own mind, and they were not about to submit that mind to Jesus Christ. That was the one that was leading them. And so the Amorites came, that dwell in the land, in the hill country, came out against you, he said, to them, and chased you, as bees do. and beat you down in Seir, even unto Hormah. And that's the reason why that place was called Hormah, destruction. And you returned and went before the Eternal, but the Lord hearkened not to your voice. Why? Because their weeping before God was not of a repentant heart. You see? Just like the people, you know, they're sorry because they got caught. They're not sorry because of what they are, what they've done. And so the Lord did not hearken unto your voices, he tells them, nor give ear unto you. He's not even going to listen to you. And imagine that. A lot of people are in this category today. They're in trouble. They call on God. They're crying to God. You know, they have sickness in the family, trouble, disease, affliction, whatever it may be, accidents. Oh, God, help me. You know, they cry and all that. And God is not even listening to them. Now, that's in essence, unfortunately, what happened to the people of Israel in the Holocaust. As much as they cried to God, God was not even listening. Why? Because all along, many of them were doing their own thing. Were not interested in obeying God. And that was the same thing, not only for them, but many nations that also lost an awful lot of people. You know, be it in, you know, the Russians or even the Americans or the English and all that. There was a lot of destruction everywhere. And God was not about to listen to people and their cries. And suddenly, a lot of people began going to churches and praying and things like that. God was not impressed with any of that. He's not interested in last moment repentance. Do you see? There's no track record there of obedience, of loving God. People, you know, rush to churches or synagogues or whatever it may be just because they're in trouble. Well, that's meaningless to God. And that's why basically what he's saying here. God would not even bother to listen to you. Because of your, you know, your behavior on a daily basis. Now, that's how God, in essence, grades our conduct on a daily basis. How do we function all the time? Are we obedient to Him? Do we seek His face? Do we want to obey His voice and commandments? Only when we are in trouble, we rush to Him, and then we wonder why He doesn't hear us. And so He said, you came down, you know, you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord hearkened not to your voice, nor gave ear unto you. So you abode in Kadesh many days, according unto the days that you abode there. So you just stuck around for a long time. And here it is. They were right on the threshold of the land of Israel, the land of promise, the land of milk and honey. And that's what happens oftentimes to us. They, in essence, repeated the same thing that Esau, as he's called, profane Esau. He had no respect for God. He had no respect for His law. He did his own thing. And then, when he found out he's not going to get a blessing, then he wept. And he cried bitterly. And he pleaded with his father to give him a blessing. And that's not the kind of a relationship that God wants to have with us. Only when we're in trouble, we cry, "Oh God." That's the time He's not going to listen to us. And that's why a lot of people are going to go through horrible, horrible fates. You know, say, in other words, trials and afflictions and all kind of evil things that happen that come upon people individually or collectively, and nobody's listening. You see? God is not interested in those kind of prayers. Chapter 2. Then we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea. Again, Reed, the Sea of Reed. And as the Lord spoke unto me, and we compassed Mount Seir many days. So they were just going in circles. In other words, going nowhere. What a fate was that? To realize that you blew it, and now for 40 years you're going to have to go in circles and stay in the wilderness when you could have had it all there. You know, that's something we should think about when we decide to do our own thing instead of being obedient to God. We're going to live in circles and go nowhere and end up in the mud pile. Verse 2, and the Lord spoke unto me, saying, you have compassed this mountain long enough. Even God got tired of them, you know, going in circles. He said, turn you northward and command the people, saying, you are to pass through the border of your brethren, the children of Esau, that dwell in Seir. And, mind you, that's the way God calls them, your brothers. In other words, remember that, your brothers. even though Esau never remembered that. And to this very day, they don't remember that. And of course, they don't even know who they are. But he said, you're going to pass through their borders, the children of Esau that dwell in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. Take ye good heed unto yourselves, therefore, contend not with them. For I will not give you of their land, no, not so much as for the sole of the foot to tread on. Why? Because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. And remember when Esau was crying to his father, don't you have any more blessings for me, even just one blessing? And Isaac said, you know, what can I do for you? You know, the land was already given to Jacob, you know, the land of promise, you see. And who knows what other things he told him at that point. And I've got nothing else left. And so it's at that point that God inspired Isaac to give him, you know, the land of Seir. And so he had to go and fight for it, yes, but God was with him, you see. And God directed him in that direction. And Mount Seir at the time was a very fertile area. So, you know, quite a, you know, blessing there. But on the other side, you know, away from the blessing that he intended for the birthright, you know, to have. But of course, even before they were born, that was already promised to Jacob. But at least Esau could have had so much more so had he been obedient to God. But still in his mercy, God gave him something. And so he said, I gave it to him, and you're not going to touch it. That's all there is to it. And he says, because I've given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. And many nations on the face of the earth were given their land and their property by God himself. And they're not aware of it. And other nations, you know, they just want, sometimes, you know, leaders rise up and they become haughty and arrogant. And they think, well, you know, I'm powerful enough. I like that land or this land or the other land. I'm going to get it. And they go and make war against it. And they don't realize that God reigns and rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomsoever he wills. And they have no business going and conquering other lands. And that's what all the world empires were all about. But on the other hand, when nations and peoples to whom God gave lands were disobedient to God, far beyond, you know, the normal disobedience, and they went into corruption and moral decay and oppression and things like that, well, God would allow others to come and take over their country and live until they, you know, they learn to behave themselves, and then he topples, you know, the emperor, whatever it may be, destroys their empire, and the nations regain their freedom again. Now, the whole history of mankind, of fighting, you know, for freedom, independence, and things like that, oftentimes were because of disobedience. One of these days, they're going to learn that, and everybody's going to be in his own land at that time, and nobody's going to buy somebody else's land. And so God makes it very plain here, and he also reveals to us something very important for us to understand. We should not take something that God hasn't given us. You see? Even if we are on the side of God, obedient to God, we should not go, we should not covet, we should not want that which God gave to others. And so this is a law here that he makes very plain. I give it to them, you don't go, and you don't bother those people. Verse 6, you shall purchase food of them for money, that you can do, that you may eat. And you shall also buy water of them for money, that you may drink. But unfortunately, Esau was so scared and fearful of Israel, and very inhospitable, and also belligerent, because he remembered what Jacob had done to him. These are the descendants, obviously. And they were not about to help their cousin, you see, or the children of their uncle, Jacob. And so that was their problem. If I deny the case, God says, don't touch them. So there was nothing they could do about it. The only result from that was that God himself, because of the attitude of Esau, punished him as time went by, and his land was not as fertile as it used to be until they had, and then they were forced in essence to move out of that area. Verse 7, for the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He has known you're walking through this great wilderness, these 40 years, the Lord your God has been with you. In spite of the fact that you were stuck in the wilderness, God was with you, and after all, he was going to bring the second generation into the land. So he was more kind and favorable to the children, under 20, who were not responsible for the sins of their fathers. They did not rebel against God. And because, you know, younger people, they don't have a say-so. in the community, the affairs of the community, so they cannot be held responsible. And so God was with them, took care of them, fed them, and that's what he's telling him. That he's telling them, Moses. And so he said, the Lord God has been with you, and you have lacked nothing, even though you were in the wilderness. You were not destitute, you were not hungry. So we pass by from our brethren, the children of Esau. Again, he's repeating that. They are our brethren, whether we like it or not. They dwell in Seir from the way of Arava, from Elat, and from Etzion Geber, which is further down near Elat. And that's where King Solomon later on had his navy, because it was a seaport. And to this very day, it's a seaport. And that's how you enter through the Red Sea, all the way up there, and you end up in Elat on one side, and Aqaba on the other side, which is now Jordan. And the whole territory there at that time became the land of Israel. So the Jordanians, in essence, they think that that's their territory. One of these days, all that is going to be given back to the rightful inheritance, the children of Israel. And so he said, and we turned and passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab, and the Lord said unto me, be not at enmity with Moab. That's another brother of Israel, in other words, the children of Lot. And Lot was a nephew of Abraham, sort of an adopted son, and God gave them the land also. He blessed Lot for his righteousness, and so he gave that land for his descendants. And in essence, that's what God had done. The people that were relatives of Abraham, basically, were given land around the land of promise. But the land of promise was given to Jacob. And so these people, instead of acknowledging the will of God and seeking the path and the ways of God, as their father did, Lot was a righteous man, well, they departed from God and now became enemies of Israel, and buying oftentimes their land, and they still do to this very day. When God made it very plain, this is my land, and I give it only to Jacob. And so the Lord said unto me, verse 9, be not at enmity with Moab, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give you of his land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. So that whole territory that was called the kingdom of Ar, the Emim dwelt there for a time, a people great, and many and tall as the Anakim. So they were giants. And they are also accounted Rephaim as the Anakim. So they were, for whatever reason, in those territories there, a lot of giants that lived in that land. But gradually, God had them destroyed because of their wickedness, not because they were tall. And they also are accounted Rephaim as the Anakim, but the Moabites called them Emim. And so they were called Rephaim by themselves, probably, and Emim by the Moabites. And the reason probably they called them Emim. Emim means fearful, because they were fearful of them. And so that's what the Moabites called them. And the word Rephaim later on became known for sort of ghosts. Rephaim, that's what Rephaim in Hebrew today, ghosts. Because people were so afraid of them that whenever they saw them, they were so terrorized. And there was a valley that is around Jerusalem. There is a valley around Jerusalem by the Kidron area called the Valley of the Rephaim. And apparently some of those people lived in that area too. And so the Moabites called them Emim. And in Seir dwelt the Horites aforetime, another kind of people. But the children of Esau succeeded them, and they destroyed them from before them. Well, they didn't destroy all of them, because the remnant of them, they just integrated. As a matter of fact, Esau actually struck an alliance with their chief, the Horite, and Seir the Horite, that was his name, and there was an intermarriage there, where the princess, the daughter, was given to his son, and from that came Amalek. Famous Amalek. And so they destroyed them before them and dwelt in their stead. Well, why did they do it? Because that was the possession that God gave Seir. And as Isaac told him, whatever you're going to inherit, you're going to have to do it by your own sword. You see? And still, God was with him. And so we read here, he dwelt in their stead as Israel did unto the land of his possession. So Israel too had to go to war. But why is it that Israel had to go to war against the Canaanites, you see, in order to get his land and possess it? Well, because Israel too was rebellious in many ways. Because otherwise God told them, you know, you really didn't have to go to war. God will go before you. He's going to send animals after them, and the bees, and then all kind of other creatures, scare them away from there, and you just come in and take over. But because they were rebellious, they did not trust God, they did not have faith in God as they should have, well, God says, okay, that's the way you want it. You're going to have to do it the hard way. And that's exactly what happens in life for every single one of us. If we put our trust in God and obey Him and do His will from the heart all the way, you see, then whatever we need to acquire in life would come much more easier for us. And that was a principle from the beginning of time. As long as Adam and Eve were obedient to God, you know, they had the Garden of Eden. They didn't have to work hard. But when they rebelled against God, now He told them, the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread. And they had thorns to contend with that were not there before. God created them to curse the land because of their rebellion. And that's the way it happens for every single one of us on a personal basis too. And so that's something we should really learn and make life easier for ourselves by seeking God with all of our being and heart. And then what we need, you know, when we need whatever we need, we're not going to get it from God the hard way. And so Israel also had to do the same for the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them. So yes, God gives it unto them, but because of their conduct, they had to go to war. And that's what happens to begin with the first war they had with Amalek. God could have just destroyed Amalek, you see. And there were several wars where God himself intervened and Israel had very little to do. And some of the battles that Joshua fought, you know, God was going in the forefront and fighting for them and dropping big rocks on them and shaking the ground, you see. There are many ways that God can deliver His people and they don't have to fight. But if they do not put their whole being and heart and trust in Him, they don't have to do a measure of it. And at the end time, we read also, you find a situation where the children of Israel, some of them returning to the land and have done it in the past century, and yet because they're not obedient to God, in order to retain their land, to have their land to begin with in the war of the independence, they had to bleed an awful lot. Though God gives it to them, yet because of their disobedience and unwillingness to serve Him, He allows them to go through these trials. And so they get it the hard way, which is unfortunate. And so they're turning around, both the people of Judah and the children of Israel who do not even know who they are, people of America and the United States and Canada and Australia and Britain and France and others. These are all children of Israel, and that land belongs to them. So what do? They put pressure on brother Judah. Of course, they're not aware that he is their brother, to give back the land to the Arabs. And that land belongs to God. He gave it to Jacob. And so in Isaiah 11, God is going to make the children of Israel, even though it speaks in specific about the house of Joseph, and also in Obadiah, He's going to make them go and fight and regain that land after they themselves put pressure on Judah to give it back. What an irony. Well, when we decide to do our own things, even though we may not be aware of it, we're going to have to pay the consequences. So even though God is going to deliver it into their hands, they're going to have to fight for it. And so this is what we read here. Just like Israel had to do for his own inheritance, that is, because they were not willing to do it the easy way, the right way. And so Moses says in verse 13, "Now rise up," speaking to the second generation, "and get you over the brook Zered." And we went over the brook Zered, and the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we were come unto the brook of Zered were 38 years. Short distance, 38 years. Imagine that. There was no need for it. In other words, about 1 year in front of Mount Sinai until the tabernacle was constructed, and then traveling some more. And so they came to that point where they could have entered into the land and they were not willing to, so they had to stick around for another 38 years. And oftentimes, the plan of God is altered because of our conduct and behavior. And so, God told Abraham originally that in about 400 years down the road, his descendants will come back to this land. Well, to begin with, it was 430, because when Moses was dealing with them or trying to help them to understand, and obviously there is something there that is not recorded until later on we find out, in the days of Stephen, who was standing before the Sanhedrin and recounting the history of Israel, he basically was saying there that when Moses came to his own people, you know, and he apparently understood that God was going to deal with the people of Israel through him. And obviously there's information there that is not recorded, where God is dealing with Moses, and Moses thinks, well, that's the way to do it, and obviously that's not the way God meant for it to be done. In either case, Israel was not willing to listen. And so, just like telling them, okay, well, that's the way you behave. Salvation is ready for you, but you are not willing to accept it. So, you know, stood in your own juice, you know, for another period of 30 years. And that's what happened. And by the time he came back, 40 years later, and from the wilderness, instead of 400 years being in, you know, in a state of, in other words, away from deliverance and salvation and all that, not that they were in Egypt 400 years. A lot of people misunderstand this statement there. 400 years, that was the period from Abraham. But instead of entering the land at that point, they had to stick around another 30 years in bondage. And then on top of that, another 40 years in the wilderness. And one has to wonder about our age that lacks faith and not very much obedient to God. Are we going to go through the same thing because of our own iniquities? And who knows? We don't know that until it happens. Verse 14, and the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we were his, you know, to this point, he said, was 38 years. Until all the generation, and that was the reason for it, until all, every single one of them, even the men of war, were consumed from the midst of the camp. So, attrition, old age, sickness, you know, untimely death, whatever it may be, plagues here and there. God was not interested in any single one of them, with the exception of the two that were obedient to God, Caleb and Joshua. And so a whole generation had just go in a circle, knowing that they are will never make it. And the children had to tag along all this time. And so kids, well, they were not kids, you know, those who were 20 years old at the time, had to live with the realization, because of their parents' conduct and behavior, they're going to have to stick around for another 40 years. So by the time they made it to the land, they were 60. And life would have been easier a long time before that. So here it is. They're 20, then they get married, then they have children. And they're 40 years there, and the children may have children. And they all have to be in the wilderness because their father was disobedient. So they learned a few things from it. And so the second generation was more obedient to God, learned lessons, and they were not about to repeat what their parents have done. So an awful lot of lessons in the meantime were learned in spite of it all. And in spite of it all, God still took care of them. He fed them. They were not hungry. You know, they didn't have any other milk and honey. But even then, you know, he allowed them to be in the area of the land, just on the other side, not enter in. And he allowed them to conquer certain lands there, which means they were able to eat of the fruit of the land, of crops, you know, all kind of things like that, that grow on the soil, the land of the Amorites that he gave them. And so it was not a total wilderness life, you see. And God was still merciful to them in spite of them. Just like with us today in this life, in spite of us, God still gives us blessings. In spite of Jacob, God still gave the blessings that he promised him to his descendants. And now and then, you know, his descendants have wonderful, glorious time in beautiful lands and things like that. And then because of their iniquity, they get punished. And so they were chased from one place to another in the past 2,800 years. You see? And life goes on like that. When it could have been all paradise, and no suffering, no sorrow, no pain, no sickness, no disease, no war, no enemies, nothing. Well, that's coming in the future. And so, we read here, 15, well, verse 14, he said, you know, they were around there until all of them were consumed from the camp as the Lord swore unto them. And he was not about to change that. So we should never want to get God to that point where he literally swears that he's not going to give it to us, you see, because by then it's too late. No matter how obedient we are after that, it's too late. You see, we're going to have to live with it for the rest of our life. Verse 15, moreover, the hand of the Lord was against them to discomfit them from the midst of the camp, until they were consumed. And God was not about to forgive them because they were, in essence, diseased in their minds, presumptuous, disobedient, rebellious. And that's what Egypt had done to them. That's what bondage had done to them. And yet God had done an awful lot of good for them, signs and wonders and miracles and deliverance and all that. That should have told them something else. And they were not willing to learn. And people were not willing to learn, they're going to have to pay the penalty for it. Verse 16, so it came to pass, when all the men of war were consumed and dead from among the people, that the Lord spoke unto me, saying, you are this day to pass over the border of Moab and even Ar, and when you come nigh against the children of Ammon, so Moab was the first one, first was Edom, and then there was the territory of Moab, and after that the territory of Ammon, which was the brother of Moab. Again, he tells them, harass them not, nor contend with them, for I will not give of you, that is, I will not give you of the land of the children of Ammon for a possession. Why again? Because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. So long before Israel came back to their land, you see, God already situated the relatives of Israel in those lands. And unfortunately, they became enemies. But the reality, at times, when Israel was obedient to God, those enemies became friends. You see, they did not torment Israel. And in the days of David and others, you know, they were on and off relationship with these neighboring nations that were sometimes good, sometimes bad, depending on righteousness. As you see today, the same thing. When our ways please God, as you read in the Proverbs, God makes even our enemies to become our friends, and that goes for national and personal relationships. And so that's something we should learn also. God, in essence, is going to place around us certain peoples, and based on our conduct and behavior, that's how we're going to be treated by them. And so this is what he says there, I gave that land to the children of Ammon for possession, and obviously you cannot touch it. Verse 20, that also is accounted the land of Rephaim. So that land also had a lot of giants there. Rephaim dwelt there aforetime, so they were destroyed, in other words. But the Ammonites called them Zamzumim. So the Rephaim in another place, but the land of Moab were called Emim, and here they were called Zamzumim. A people great and many and tall as the Anakim, but the Lord destroyed, and the word Anak in Hebrew is a giant, but the Lord destroyed them before them. So God was involved in the destruction of these people, obviously because of their wickedness, not because they were tall. And so he allowed and gave strength and help to the people of Ammon and Moab to destroy these people. The people of Seir had done the same, you see. And he allowed other nations to also come and destroy these people. As always, because of conduct and behavior on the part of those people. Why were the giants and tall and all kind of things like that? God knows, even though some people try to invent all kind of false doctrines to claim that those were people that, like before the flood, you know, they came from an intermarriage between angels and women, which is an utter insanity on the part of men to even conceive of that. But when people listen to other spirits, they'll believe anything. Verse 22, and so he says, God destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them, that is the people of Ammon, and dwelt in their stead. So that whole territory there was the land of giants, and they were around the land of Israel. And they were also in the land of Israel, because some of them were also on the other side, among the Philistines, the Goliath family. Verse 22, as it is for the children of Esau that dwell in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them, and succeeded them, and dwelt in their stead even unto this day. So that's speaking by the time when this record was put together, obviously by Moses, unto this day. Verse 23. And the Avim that dwelt in villages as far as Gaza, again, as I mentioned earlier, Avim also were, some of them were giants, Gaza, and that's on the other side of the land, on the western shore of the Mediterranean, as far as Gaza, or Azza in Hebrew, you know, because Western languages cannot pronounce those guttural sounds, so So gradually it became Gaza instead of Aza. And this is what you read here. And the Kafturim. Kafturim is a very interesting name, because in Hebrew, Kaftur means button, you know, like the buttons here on your shirt. I don't know what they were called by that name. But they came from a land that is called Kaftur. And so it says the Kafturim that came from, they came forth out of Kaftur, which was, you know, one of the Greek islands. They came to the land where the Avim were, and they destroyed them and dwelt in their state. Now, why did these people come over here? Because these are not relatives of Abraham. The Philistines, the one that became known later on as the Philistines. Philistines, all it means is just invaders. They were not Philistines. They were Kafturim. But the local people called them Philistines because they invaded the land, so they called them the invaders. And that became their name to this very day. And from that comes the word Palestine, the land of the invaders. And God is not interested in anybody invading his land. You know, a lot of people are proud of being called Palestinian. They don't realize what it means. It's a, you know, it's not the right term that you want to be called by. And one of these days, God is going to destroy the invaders, as he promised. And so, he said, they came and dwelt there. These people, the Kafturim, were actually children of Mitzrayim, which was one of the sons of Ham. So they were Hamitic people. And they are there to this very day. That is, remnant of them. A thorn in the flesh of Israel, as they have always been. Until, you see, when the people of God obey God, then they are at peace with them. And their job to begin with was to liquidate all of them and then inherit that land. But, you know, because they were not obedient to God, the Danites, who had that territory, were not able to do it. So, God, because of the disobedience of Israel, he made it very plain to them. He's not going to remove all these people. He's going to cause them to become thorns in their flesh. And the only way they could have peace with them is by being obedient to God. You see? In the days of Abraham, he didn't have problems with the Philistines. He was at peace with them. In the days of Isaac, they had some problems in terms of water, but still he was in peace, at peace with them. Apart from that, he even made a covenant, like his father, with the king of the Philistines, Abimelech. And they were here. So God, in essence, you know, placed certain people all around the land of Israel to, in one way, you might think, to spank Israel whenever they were not behaving themselves. And so this is what's happening here. But the majority of them are basically relatives of Abraham and of Israel. And so they dwelt in their stead. And then in verse 24 we read, and I tell them, rise you up, take your journey, and pass over the valley of Arnon. Behold, I have given into your hand Sihon, the Amorite king of Heshbon, who was also a giant, and his land, and begin to possess it. So they had to go to war, and that's what they did. They possessed it in the days of Moses. And contend with him. In other words, start a fight with him in battle. In other words, declare war on him and go to war, and God said, I'll be with you. And that was a land that was on the eastern part of the river, Jordan. And this day he said, this day will I begin. So, again, we read in verse 25, this day will I begin to put the dread of you and the fear of you upon the peoples that are under the whole heaven. Which is very interesting. It's not only the people that are going to be in the land that you're going to possess, but everybody on the face of the earth is going to hear of you and know of all the signs and wonders and mighty deeds that I'm going to do for you and the deliverance that I'm going to bring you. And literally he said, everybody on the face of the earth is going to shake and fear you. Well, that was one way that God was going to get the attention of the entirety of the earth to the fact that this is his people and he's with them. And a lot of people all around the earth came to know that. And some of them, we don't know how many, actually came to the land to seek the face of the God of Jacob. We hear about different people like that, just like, you know, later on in the days of Solomon. And that was only one example. Queen of Sheba came from Ethiopia. But they were coming from all, literally from all around the earth, because they heard about the God of Israel. And so that's what God is saying here. And this is an ultimate thing that is going to happen actually in the future, because had they been totally obedient to God, that would have become a reality. And so the whole earth would have sought the face and the path and the righteousness of the God of Israel. And so ultimately we see that this is going to be fulfilled in the future, where all the nations of the earth are going to come to Jerusalem to seek the face of God. And God makes it very plain as we read through the prophets that any nation on the face of the earth that is not willing to serve Jerusalem, to serve Israel, God makes it very plain. Any nation like that will perish. As simple as that. Because when God sets his hand to deliver not only Israel but the whole earth, if they are not willing to walk in his path and commandments, God in essence will tell them, your lease for life is gone. You'll have to be dead, you know, destroyed. And it's going to be as simple as that. He's not going to tolerate any more people going their own way and doing their own things. And he's going to force them to come to Jerusalem to learn of his law and of his word, of the Torah that we are studying here, and to obey it, and to come and keep the Feast of Tabernacle and any other holiday. This is just the one that he mentioned. That's not the only one that is going to be kept, obviously. In other words, he's going to first force all of humanity to begin to walk in his path and in his way, and for that reason he's going to use the rod of iron in the beginning for all those who are not going to be willing to do so. And they're going to learn very quickly, this is the God not only of Israel but of the whole earth, and we better obey him or else. So this statement is, in essence, though it is made here, it could have been fulfilled in the days of Israel had they been obedient, and gradually God would have brought it about, and the kingdom of God would have been not only over Israel, but over the entirety of the whole earth. Well, Israel was not willing at that time to do it, and God did not do away with that, you see. That was the ultimate purpose to begin with, and the disciples of Christ knew it, and that's why, you know, they asked Jesus Christ, will you come, you know, are you going to return at this time to restore the kingdom to Israel? You see, the kingdom that was ultimately going to reign over all the nations of the earth, in terms of showing them the ways of God. You see, the path of God, his righteousness, not necessarily, you know, have dominion over all the nations of the earth in the wrong way, like all the other emperors were doing. And so that's what he's saying here. He's going, this day, that was the beginning of it. So the kingdom of God, the paradise, and all that all the prophets talk about, could have been there at that point. This is when God determined for that time to happen. But because of disobedience, here it is. 3,500 years down the road, and it's not here yet. So you can see here a sort of postponement of the fulfillment of prophecy for 3,500 years because of disobedience on the part of Israel. But the story is not over. We're talking only about 3.5 days, you know, on God's timetable, or 3.5 seconds, you see. And some people in their blindness and ignorance think, well, because Israel didn't do it, now God chose us. There's no such a thing. God chose Israel, and Israel, whether they like it or not, are going to fulfill this thing. And Israel will be brought back to his land, and will be brought back from the grave to life, and to his land, and they're going to fulfill the commission that God gave them to be the light of all the nations. You see, so the story is not over, but people in their own, you know, conceit, wise in their own conceit, they think that they know better. And so they say, well, you know, Israel, you blew it, so God chose us. So now, you know, we are the Gentile world church, and it's made of some of you, yes, but, you know, now there is a church made of all the nations of the earth, and we are the people of God, and we are the Israel of God, and we have the salvation of God, and they appropriate everything to themselves, and their blindness and ignorance, and they don't realize the story is not over yet. You see? Because they're not reading the whole book, as they should. Only the pick and choose, you know, a few little statements here and there, and based on that they build their own religion and theology. And God is going to come very soon and totally blot it out from under heaven. And there isn't going to be any remnant to any of those religions. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph, greetings all of God's people. Until next time.